Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
You know, the thing that is so insidious about these regressives is that they pretend to be passive, not harming anyone, and all the while they're spreading their lies, trying to make you believe these awful things.
Why would they do that?
They have some twisted ideas about resisting progress, which they think gives them the right to hold us back in any way that they can. They're trying to undermine us, to cause dissent and doubt. Just look at how they've affected you.
But what they're saying is so horrible.
Yes, but it isn't very plausible. Corinna Fink, a secret conspiracy against their people? Organized murder on such an enormous scale? Do you really believe that your family and friends are capable of that?
Speaking of reporting neighbors...
Are you talking about turning in your neighbors?
That's kind of what this episode was about.
Hey, before we start... Hey, guys. Before we start talking about the episode, Dan...
Let's not talk about the
episode. Dan, you and Jesse, before the podcast started, which is now, you and Jesse were talking about Ace of Base.
Well, it was playing, and I just commented on it.
Right.
And you was there some fact we learned about Ace of Base, or did we not learn the fact?
Oh, well...
Jesse was trying to say I saw the sign was a cover, and I was like, I don't think so.
I thought it was.
But then Jesse determined it wasn't.
I was wrong.
So it's not that you learned a fact, it's that you debunked...
We debunked one of my...
A misconception. So it's a classic Jesse misconception, thoroughly debunked
but we learned
by
about,
Jesse.
We learned about some other covers they did.
Like the summer.
Don't turn around.
Cruel Summer and Don't Turn Around are covers.
Yeah.
Oh, those are good Ace of Base facts.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Base.
Isn't that crazy?
It's not that crazy.
It's just wild, man. I can't handle it.
I don't know.
I can't do it.
Hey, Jesse, can you handle that?
No.
Hey, Jesse, what are you doing? Can you handle that right now?
I'm trying to handle it.
Hey, Jesse, what did you think about that?
I thought, I don't know.
Hey, Jesse. Hey, what are you doing? Hey, Jesse, what are you doing? What do you think about that kind of thing?
Okay.
Ace of Base. Ace of Base. I read their lyrics off of Notepad++.
Hello, folks.
I forgot about that Notepad++.
We would...
the wine.
We would all like
I
to...
I remember the wine.
We'd like to welcome you.
Welcome.
We'd like to welcome you to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
B'Elanna, wake up.
B'Elanna's on it.
B'Elanna is indeed.
B'Elanna's on it.
On it, finally. Actually,
yeah.
I'm struggling.
B'Elanna. It's been a while since B'Elanna's been on it.
It's been a while.
It's been a while.
It's been a while.
No. No.
It has
No.
It has been some time.
It's been some time.
A while.
It has been some time.
Been some time.
We have been able to discuss a B'Elanna centric episode.
B'Elanna's on it.
I believe the last one was Muse. Was it when she
Muse, where she
crash landed on that planet, and then the playwright guy was talking to her, and like he was like reading her logs and like making. You know, he was like using her life story to make a play.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. That one.
Did we talk about that one?
We talked about that one.
Oh, man.
I mean, I think you were there. You might have fallen asleep to
us. That's likely. Yes.
We totally talked about that one. Yeah. That one was an okay episode. Maybe a bit.
That was wonderful.
Maybe a bit forgettable. No
maybe
pun
I should
intended.
Revisit that.
Yeah.
Now, this episode, we are not talking about Muse.
No.
We are talking about Remember.
I find it impossible that any of us could be doing this purposely.
Why would we do such a thing?
Something leads me to believe, Dan, that you don't trust that guy. We can talk about
All right, don't project onto me. I bet you don't trust him either.
Maybe I trust him implicitly.
I don't think he trusts anyone.
Yeah.
You never know. We have to wait.
We've been hiding it.
We have to wait till we get to the appropriate point in the conversation to reveal these little tidbits.
Yes.
Sort of the journey you go through, kind of like this episode. You go through a little journey. There's a mystery.
They're getting kind of strange.
The story has different threads that weave strange, together, that the podcast will be structured in much, much the same way.
Oh, I wish I could hold you right now.
All right. yes, I suppose we should just get right into it then. Get right into our discussion of...
Maybe we already have.
Remember, I should
This is all voluntary, isn't it?
Doing the podcast or listening to the podcast?
Exactly.
I think listening to it is voluntary in most contexts, certainly all the contexts that I'm familiar with.
So they're enjoyable.
If you find that you are listening to the It's Got Star Trek podcast in an involuntary context, please write in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com with the subject line help.
please, this has to come out. No, really, I insist.
Okay, all right. Remember.
Remember.
So, here's the thing about this episode. I'm not saying this to Joe.
Joe? Who's Joe?
No, I'm not saying it to joke.
Joe Mama.
Joke?
I'm not trying to joke around.
Okay.
When your algorithm told us, it said, you're going to do Remember.
Mm-hmm.
I said... What? I said, I don't remember that episode. And I've watched Voyager many times.
Don't remember.
I remember the name, but I couldn't remember what the episode was about.
Yeah.
But I figured that once I started watching Remember, I would then remember,
I remember their weird shit on their hair.
And indeed I did. I remembered the, once it started, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember.
No wonder you've been confused.
And I think it was the...
hair tissue.
I think it was the moment Bruce Davison walks in.
Bruce Davison.
That's right.
Oh, he's the guy who's the guy who's in a lot of things.
He's Jared.
He was in an episode we talked about recently. Enterprise.
Yeah, he was on Enterprise the Seventh.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Which is a cool episode of Enterprise. We discussed that episode in...
In Seinfeld.
It was episode 231 of It's Got Star Trek when we discussed the Seventh.
I recorded, and I probably should use some more discretion, but I recorded the whole scene where he was being extra fucked up to B'Elanna / Corena. It was like 64 seconds long, so we don't have to play it, but like that, you know what scene I'm talking about.
That might be the one I play at the beginning of the episode.
Okay. Well, then you've already heard it.
I try to pick under a minute.
You can probably trim it a couple seconds.
Yeah, probably like do little squeakies and little tikis.
Cool. Okay, so everyone's already heard it then.
I don't need to
play it because they've already heard it.
However, there is a chance that I go and listen to it.
No.
And I'm like, you know what? I don't like this for the beginning.
No, you're lying.
No, maybe I like a different thing for the beginning. It's like sometimes it's the most stressful thing is to pick what audio clip goes at the beginning and what audio clip goes to the end.
I don't think
not according to your cortical theta wave readings.
The problem with the beginning clip is you want to pick a clip. That provides a thematic and emotional, and ideally also a plot-centric, plot explanatory and expositional aspect of the show. Like, if you can hit all three of those, you're doing great. Yeah. And if you can hit all three of those and keep it in 60 seconds or under, wonderful.
It's gold, baby.
It's super, it's gold press latinum right there.
Yeah.
About the end clip the clip at the end of the show is supposed to be a brief, funny clip.
Right.
And sometimes the episodes just aren't so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
That was very sad.
Star Trek is not always a barrel of monkeys.
Sometimes it's upsetting.
Yeah.
Although most episodes, even those that are fairly heavy, will have some funny stuff. Like The City on the Edge of Forever is a pretty fucking heavy episode. Mm-hmm. But it's got all sorts of like, Sharon, you might be an alien.
Yeah, there was a whole
police
scene.
Officer.
Yeah, well, but right before that, Kirk was like, they played the music because he was like going up someone's fire escape or something. He was like
stealing clothes.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
But anyway,
mugged some
not to digress.
So wait, why were we saying that?
I don't know.
We were saying that for some reason. There was something we said prior to that.
We were talking about Star Trek. Yeah, and we got sidetracked to some other Star Trek.
I have nothing to say to you.
March down. It's called path dependency.
Is this one of the college words you've done learned?
Path dependency.
It is a college word?
It is indeed a college word. It is commonly used in public.
Is this one of your? Is this one of your
policy?
Is this one of your $5,000 words
on
you got
path
here?
Public administration. Sadly,
is this one of your high society words you use to keep your status?
I wish $5,000 would have covered it. We live in a terrible country.
Well, you spoke a lot of words, so just 5,000 times.
Yeah.
million words. A million, I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
But you're one of your status words, man. Like one of your I'm better than you words, because I can encapsulate some kind of process that we have decided is useful.
Encapsulate.
What's this Canadian
some process
business?
that we've decided is useful, and we can encapsulate it in this college word. This
I know,
word of status.
I know.
And knowledge.
Awesome. If we had the privilege to live in Canada right now, we'd probably really enjoy that. But you can't just pretend by saying words like process and project.
It's highly unlikely.
No, indeed.
Well, I just say what I say because I'm just like really into words that convey the meaning that my brain is thinking about. Mm-hmm. That's just what I'm into. I'm just really into like using words that express the meaning that is produced when my brain neurons in my brain fire back and forth.
Constitutional monarchies?
I haven't really thought about it too much.
That's what Canada is.
Oh, that wasn't just a random question. You were trying to you curried me.
Hey, Dan, you Obama, you have been curried.
Oh, shit.
Patrick, you lunching. You're lunching.
I am lunching.
Bam.
All up and down.
Yeah.
In this place. All right.
You'll rip my heart out and eat it raw.
Okay. All right, Chakotay. Enough of that. Thankfully, we didn't need to deal too much with Chakotay this episode. Mm-hmm.
No animal guides.
All right. So yes, we'll start out at the beginning here.
Learn the truth for yourself.
Voyager is, for one reason or another, transporting a group of people who call themselves the Inarins.
Inarins.
And do you know where the Inarins are heading to?
Annoying.
They're headed to Inaria?
No, they're headed to Inara Prime.
Oh, Inara Prime. I was close.
I forget the name of the colony they were at. They were at some colony.
Oh, they were at a colony.
Well, I bet I can look it up right quick.
And you look it up, and I will comment on the fact
going
that...
going back to the mother.
I was immediately charmed.
Well, it's a colony in the FEMA system.
Oh, well, there you go.
It doesn't say what the colony the FEMA. Is.
Yeah, the Federal Emergency Management something or other association.
Yes.
What I was charmed by straight away was the introduction of this idea, not introduction, but the utilization of this idea that Voyager had a technology that was better than these folks in terms of the fast warp drive. Mm-hmm. And then these folks had a technology that was better than Voyager in terms of power consumption or something like that, sort of some sort of power.
Oh, it was a proper trade where both sides
win. Exactly. And
it was
also...
It wasn't like one side had... like both sides had a surplus of what they need.
They also had magical memory powers.
It's a perfect trade. Yeah, both sides had a surplus of the thing that the other wanted. So there wasn't like a, well, I got to compromise and give this bullshit away so I can get my bullshit. But like,
it was totally Star Trek
honest trade. But also just from sci-fi perspective, I enjoy when we have a little bit more of this differentiation that we had a little bit on TOS. Definitely they accentuated in certain angles in Enterprise, right? Enterprise was always talking about how the humans had warp 5 and the Vulcans had like warp 6 and 7 or whatever, you know, like,
well, in the Enterprise they were always talking about the Vulcans wouldn't give them warp 5.
But the Vulcans also always kept themselves a little bit ahead. The deal being like the humans didn't get to do warp 5 until the Vulcans had a little bit more. But anyway, the point being is that in a lot of TNG, DS9, there was less of that. Not none, but most people were at parity. They could go at warp roughly the same way. The weapons were roughly the same. And you know what? That's a natural evolution of a world-building franchise, because that makes everybody on par with each other in order to be able to compete. So I like seeing these examples of the more realistic alternative.
Oh, do you like it because everybody gets to win, or do you like it because like it just seems more realistic?
In this case, for both reasons.
For both reasons.
Yeah.
So you feel good for those people.
Well, also because in economics, I think the colloquial interpretation.
See, he's using his college words.
Colloquial.
He's encapsulating some kind of economics lesson.
You went to college too.
Yeah. What are you talking about, college?
But I'm just saying, like, you know, you're using one of your words
there
to describe a process that you learn in a class.
Well, what I was going to say, what I mean to say is, I think. Certainly in the U.S. and probably some other places as well, there is sort of a belief that trade is aggressive and adversarial by nature, and that there are always winners and losers.
Right.
And certainly that can be the case sometimes, but actually in the...
That's more like imperialism.
The way you want things to work is the ideal trade system is where people aren't, like you said, you gave the perfect example, Dan. No, there's no particular compromise. Yeah. People have surpluses of one thing or the other, and that they're willing to trade, and that there's a certain value that they determine with each other.
Right, and I was just simply asking, did
and
you...
everyone's happy.
Yeah, I know, but I was thinking, you said, well, my question...
I like that.
My question was, did you like it more because it seemed more realistic and it fit together more nicely, or did you like it because you felt happy for the people? But you're saying both.
So, I'm saying both in this case, but to give an example... In Enterprise, we would see times where the Enterprise was far outclassed by somebody else and it wasn't a fair trade or exchange. And then vice versa, we'd seen Enterprise beat the shit out of some people to steal a warp coil from them because they could, right? What? And I didn't like that they were doing that, but I enjoyed that it was a realistic sort of gradation in the technology of people. The other thing that I think is emphasized here is that these people don't have fast warp drive, but they have really cool other advanced technology. It's not like they have some magic herb or some shit that they can trade. That's the other mistake I think you see on Star Trek is like, okay, this tribe only has value because they have access to oil or some stick or some crystals, some dilithium or some shit like that. That's not the case here. They're like super advanced people too.
What was that
too.
Grain called?
But, not everybody invents shit at the same time. The Egyptians didn't use fucking wheels forever.
Okay, so in order to extrapolate,
they didn't need them.
The answer to my question, you like the sort of realism, like how it fits together nicely in a nice package. You don't give a shit so much that the people are happier as a result.
No, I do. You keep... I'm saying the first, like, the most important thing is that it's realistic, but then the added bonus that is awesome is that it's a reinforcing the true fact that... True fact is so... I hate when people say
true
fact.
Yeah, it's dumb.
It's emphasizing the reality that many, if not most, trade situations can, in fact, be completely beneficial.
So you've given reasons as to why you like the realistic fits together one, but you still haven't given any reasons as to why you like it because it just makes people feel good.
I thought that would be self-evident because it makes people feel good. It's nice. But also because I think it's true. I thought I explained this earlier.
You know, one of the things I love about you most is your compassion for others.
I thought I had explained earlier that I like that it's countering the common stereotype that trades are adversarial by definition.
Like with Ferengi. Ferengi are always adversarial. They're always,
and Ferengi don't consider themselves having gotten a good deal unless they feel that they've ripped somebody off.
Yeah,
and that's a fucked up perspective, especially if you internalize that and just think that that's natural, which can make you become either a natural victim of it or a natural perpetrator of that, depending on which side of the transaction you find yourself on a given day.
That's very cool.
No. But that's the very beginning of the episode, the Inarans. Jesse noted earlier they got weird hair, basically Kazon hairstyle, right? They're not like, they don't have like the other weird Kazon looking stuff, but their hair treatment is a little bit similar to the old Kazon style.
Yeah.
Do you disagree, Dan?
I never actually paid attention to their hair one bit in this episode.
Come on.
I didn't notice that.
I like how Jesse and I were like, they had some weird hair.
I don't know. This episode was like whatever.
It's kind of whatever.
It's kind of like whatever.
I like this episode.
It was a good episode, but it's like it just seems like it's a lot of stuff we've seen.
Yeah.
But there's nothing inherently wrong with it. Like it's Star Trek. It was a good assemblage of Star Trek material.
You don't like that opening line where Janeway was all like, you know, we discovered some blah 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 blah, but perhaps more importantly, their friendship.
Yes.
Do you have
and
that?
Perhaps more importantly, their friendship.
Yeah. It's so cheesy, but also kind of awesome.
And then she also later she says,
"I love music."
Yeah. Gives us a little window into her mind. She loves music.
Oh, now we know about Janeway.
Perhaps more importantly, their friendship.
I can sense the less than stellar response from you guys. To me, maybe it's partly because we watched Daedalus, you know, from Enterprise.
Oh, speaking of Daedalus, we don't have to do it, but we have to at least announce that we totally forgot.
We fucked up.
We forgot duty or no duty.
There's a duty or no duty.
So maybe we do it one day.
It's a duty or no duty errata.
Should we do it as a bonus episode?
Yeah, bonus episode. Because there's three duty or no duties this episode. That's a lot of duties.
Yeah, no, we can't. And it wouldn't make any sense because the people who are listening to this episode did not necessarily watch
So
Daedalus.
We've given you homework.
Yeah.
Free podcast from some people you don't know. And we're demanding that you do something for us.
But I do bring up last week's discussion of Daedalus because...
You said Daedalus.
One of our
wait, you said Daedalus.
One of our critiques.
Remember last week you said Daedalus. Jesse said Daddledeuce or something.
Daedalus.
Daddledeuce. Daddledoos.
Daedalus.
You said
I said Daedalus, and you said Daedalus.
Pumblemoose. You said Daddledoos.
Pumblemoose.
Pumblemoose.
Dollary doos.
Kangaroos.
Dollary doos.
Didgeridoos.
Anyway.
Didgeridoos.
Daedalus. I bring that up because
I'm glad to bring you to my side of Daedalus, Patrick.
One of our critiques of Daedalus was that supposedly.
Supposedly.
One of our critiques of Daedalus.
I win. What? What'd you say? I don't know what I'm talking about.
What?
Was that it's doing that thing where it like hides the story until like you don't know how you're supposed to feel it until later because you need information from later in the story to know how to feel earlier in the story. This episode did not have that problem in my view. And I knew how this ended because as I said earlier,
you remembered after I remembered
after we started watching it. Once I saw Bruce Davidson, I was like, okay,
I remember.
So I remembered how it ended. I remembered the kind of cool twist and I know we'll talk later about,
but you know, you were too late.
How this is very derivative of like a bunch of other Star Trek episodes, but unlike Daedalus, this was very nicely written in that as you're going along, you are understanding and learning and feeling the emotions you are intended to feel by the writer.
Yeah. Learn the truth
and
for yourself.
It all builds to, it's predictable, maybe not, but it still builds to a sensible conclusion.
It was well put together, absolutely. I'm not trying to criticize it and like, I'm just saying, you know, it's, you know, there's a lot of Star Trek episodes that are a lot of, a lot of other Star Trek episodes.
A lot of more.
I like sort of like the slow sort of turn, it wasn't technically a turn, but like the crescendo of Jareth's like evil assholeness, until by the end, he's like being super weird and evil to his own daughter. Like it's fucked up.
Yeah.
That whole thing at the end was really fucked up.
I think that part
at the end with him and Karenya. That was definitely my favorite part of the episode. That was one of the better Star Trek moments, I thought. It was just so like, I just felt so awful after I saw it.
To me,
when he's like, that's very cruel.
One of the values of this episode is I think it's a pretty realistic depiction, if condensed, of course.
Finish your Taran juice.
And embedded within
it's good for you.
Psychic sci-fi context, the mechanism of how people join in to bad things.
Do not let the voices of fear and ignorance discourage you.
I think it's all laid out very efficiently in this episode, and I like how you put it.
These people have no conscience.
It's a crescendo because it's that sounding reasonable at first and then less and less so, but you have to see it in an accelerated fashion in order for it to stand out, because otherwise
he told you, he's in love with you.
There's the risk that you get tricked by it, because this is exactly how people get tricked by not wanting to go in against their own family members who slowly march them down a path of slightly unreasonable until one day you're like, hey, how the fuck did we get to hear
all of
from
a sudden
there?
We're racist.
That's very cruel.
Yeah.
Do you really believe that your family and friends are capable of that?
Yeah. I have a.
Is it a list?
Well, it's called Evil Jareth, but all my lists were actually kind of long this episode. Like, I tried to do a list of the dreams.
As opposed to all the other lists?
So, well, I mean, these are like each point is so long. Like, when I tried to do the dreams, the first and second dream were, like, really easy to put in a bullet point in a list. But then the dreams started becoming more and more like the entire episodes. Like, so the first dream, I kind of like that. The first dream was, like, only a few seconds. The next was a little longer. But by the last dream, it was, like, a quarter of the episode.
So is this list just a narrative description?
Yeah, and then it turns into just a narrative of like the fucking episode, because like at first, like number one was some dude comes in through a window and they make out, and then number two was her father tells her not to hang around that nasty Dathan. Then he leaves the room and he sneaks out from his hidey hole, and then they make out.
They totally do it.
And then there's the waking dream, and then
the one where he's all burnt up.
Yeah, that's is
burnt
that the
crispy?
One? I think that's the crispy. Is that the.
Because they show him that way twice, once early on when it's kind of in a dream world style, and then later when he's executed.
Oh, shit.
He says if they're doing glory. Her father, is that the one where her father is speaking to them? They're a group of soldiers, and B'Elanna's one of the soldiers. I'm just going to say B'Elanna.
B'Elanna's on it.
B'Elanna's on the line of soldiers stuff.
B'Elanna's on it.
And then the fourth is like, oh, there was... Okay, there's the whole. I like that. There's like, a whole weird.
Dan's like telling us about his lists, but it's just he's just telling us the list.
Yeah, I know. I was like, you know, I'm not gonna give this list, but you have an idea.
I want you to keep doing the list. And
but like, I'm not gonna do the when it starts. I'll tell you when it starts to get really long. Right, and I won't do it.
You tell us when it starts to get really long. But then there's a different list, which is Ugly Jareth. We'll do that.
Evil Jareth.
We'll do that in the next break. The three duty or no duties we'll do in the third break.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Duty time.
Because you got to have something to keep the audience around. It's one of the audience's favorite things is the fucking.
Hope so.
Duty or no duties.
Ouchie pups.
And by the way, if you're a new listener, you don't know what duty or no duty is, don't worry.
Don't
you worry.
You'll find out. By the way, I'm
terribly sorry,
pronouncing
Captain.
It wrong. It's not duty or no duty. It's duty or no duty.
Yes.
And that's a clue to what we're going to be talking about later.
Yes.
In the third break.
I'm sorry.
All right. So continue your list until you choose not to continue.
So,
because you of all people think it'll be too much.
Well,
too long.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. Was it the third one or where he burns up, or was it the fourth one? I guess it was the third one.
You're the keeper of the list.
I know I wrote something about the burning one, but I can't remember which. Anyways, whatever.
It was just funny that burning the it was all sexy and fun, and then it just switched to some sort of body horror, some nightmarish body horror.
Yeah, I don't know which one that was. I'm going to go with you as the third one. There was the whole weird side thing that we should talk about was like the discussion between Chakotay and B'Elanna about their fucking sex dreams.
I didn't like that.
I brought that up because between the two times Chakotay is like, I had something written about Chakotay and B'Elanna talking about sex dreams in this list. I don't know why.
It's related to the dreams.
It's like a footnote. It's a footnote.
Yeah, I think it's a footnote. You're right.
But why is she should talk? It seems like she would talk to somebody else about it. Why is she talking to Chakotay about it?
I think it was the fourth one that, because there's one where a bell rings and he runs away and then she wakes up all passed out on the ground. No, you're right. It's the third one. I think the fourth one, a bell rings, he runs away because she just got an award and so she talks to Dathan and then he runs away and she wakes out all passed out on the floor.
Hilarious.
Oh, the fifth one is when she pulls out her inhibitor. You can tell her inhibitor went off because
inhibitor went off.
Because it goes down in pitch. Listen. Here go.
Is that when she tucked it off her?
That's her dream inhibitor. Yeah,
off her neck.
Yeah, and then a bunch of shit comes up. That's the first time the term regressive comes up in her fifth dream, and that one's pretty long. And then the sixth one is the last one, and that's just like super long. So yeah, that was my anticlimactic, half-ass explained some of the list.
I don't think it was anticlimactic.
It was.
I listed some of the list items, and I bailed on the last three items, but and decided
but
to tell
did
you what
so.
It was. What my I was telling you what my intention was, that, but they
so.
Did not make the cut.
You did so out of a kindness.
I think it
out
was
of a kindness.
Out of a kindness to both.
It was still a performance.
The audience and your co-host. You've done.
You know,
a
one of the things I love about you most is your compassion for others.
You've done us a mitzvah, Dan.
Oh, wow!
Mitzvah. Thank you. What'd you think of that?
Not according Dathan? To your cortical theta wave readings.
Dathan was pretty sexy.
Dathan. His name is Dathan.
I didn't like the name Dathan.
No. Like Dathan?
That's a dumb name.
Because it really, like, usually Star Trek's
mean,
a little bit
you
better.
You mean like Nathan?
Yeah,
is that what they
like,
mean?
Like, hey, we need like, a name.
Dathan.
How
it's
about,
like you're just
you know,
mispronouncing Nathan.
It's like Nathan, but with a D.
Dathan?
Oh.
And then people think he's got a big D.
It's like, do you have a speech impediment?
Apparently the person who played Jessen was in an episode of Seinfeld, or was in Seinfeld, or a few episodes.
Oh, that guy, yeah.
Jessen, you mean the older fella?
No, the woman.
Oh, the woman. Which woman?
Jessen.
Well, the
younger woman or the older woman?
She was, Jessen was the one who said,
Wait a minute. I'm gonna
when she goes,
the Inarns would never do anything like what you're saying. It's unthinkable.
Is she the one that Harry?
No, you're lying.
Harry Kim had a cruise crush on.
Oh, wait a minute.
It was a cruise crush.
Yeah.
You know, because they're like on a cruise.
Yeah, he was. That was weird.
And they're all like, we're gonna date and like do stuff together because we know like it's limited.
Yeah,
and we'll be sad at the end if it works out. But we probably wouldn't like each other.
Harry
in real
Kim's
life.
A sly dog.
That was the time when B'Elanna was like, you know,
wooed her with a clarinet.
When B'Elanna was like, and but then he was like, okay, and then she's all like,
no, really, I insist.
She got all pissed about it afterwards.
Well,
you know,
she was joking around.
Although, I know, but that, she would say she was exasperated.
I think it's a good point.
It was Jessen. It was Jessen. By the way,
it was a good time mentioning that to call out B'Elanna getting to be a different version, you know, because she's in these memories, she's a different person, right? Mm-hmm. So Roxanne Dawson's able to play like a different character. Yeah. But B'Elanna was feeling like it was her. So in the sci-fi context, it's kind of like a fun thing for her to have a very different personality. It was more playful in some ways, still very smart.
Less Klingon.
But yeah, very, very different personality. And so it was interesting just to see that from both from Dawson and from the character. So I enjoyed that.
That was when they were making out.
Yeah.
They were making out. She went, whoop!
Yeah. Well, yeah, she was making all kinds of noises.
See, these are non-B'Elanna-ish types of exclamations and
sort of non-Star Trek.
Yeah, well, a little bit.
And then you killed her. They're getting kind of strange.
Yeah.
Algae puffs.
Algae puffs.
What
indeed.
Did he do?
And then you killed her.
Algae puffs.
They're getting kind of strange.
Rory member.
Neelix is a space creep, and he's done so many things on screen and off. Doubt that we should be horrified by. But one thing I'll tell you that Neelix will never do. He will never prevent us from going to break.
Take a break.
What?
It's time for a break.
Whoa, how'd we
Dathan
do that?
That guy went to T.C. Williams.
No,
that's a local high school.
The actor that played, yeah.
That's now, the same.
That was called Alexandria City High
and School. And that's the movie, that or the school that movie was about, like Welcome to the Lions or whatever.
Right.
What was it called?
Remember the Titans.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Remember the Titans.
I kind of want to see Welcome to the Lions.
I don't know if they have the same name, but they changed the name of the team, but they changed the name of the school.
All right.
Blah, 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 blah.
Local facts.
Time for
Loman's Plaza is now called Graham Park.
More local facts and Star Trek discussion when we get back.
Hopefully
after the break.
More Star Trek.
Indeed, we will be right back.
I'm relieving you.
And we are back.
Can we talk for a minute?
No. We can talk for approximately 30 minutes.
Algae puffs. Algae puffs.
Algae puffs.
Give or take.
Oh, and then you killed her.
You think algae puffs are good?
Yeah.
I mean, they seem
not Neelix style.
They seem to make. They don't have any tables or chairs. How do they eat their food if they have no? They had trays, but they have no tables or chairs.
Very carefully.
This was an extremely Star Trek scene. Both the atmospheric music, the weird orb guitar.
I love music.
Yeah, the orb guitar.
Orb guitar.
All the curves.
I was gonna say that music, that brilliant composition she made sounded like season 2 TNG. Like
I was in my notes. I was like very TNG style. I was like
Oh wait, real quick. Speaking of music,
real quick.
This is a side quest here, but it'll just take a second. See if you recognize anything in this. I'll play the shortened version.
And please specify, because I was listening to the music. I was listening to the voices.
Okay, the music.
All right, intently listening to the voices, and I thought I was hearing.
Do you want me to play
clever spells and sort of incantations?
The voices were kind of loud, but do you want me to play like the full again or just the shortened version?
You can play the shortened one but we're gonna pay attention to the muse.
Yeah.
Sounded like Deep Space Nine.
Sounded like Star Trek. It went
or like Star Trek.
Classic Star Trek sort of motif.
I guess that's not that that surprising.
See,
but that's cool.
So the full version. But then it varies off, goes off there.
Made it sound even more Star Trek-y. Just TNG style.
Yeah, so I guess that wasn't a side quest. That strengthened the point.
That was a main quest.
Yeah.
Are you a genius of sound?
Nothing is impossible if you want it badly enough.
Well, because earlier he was playing a bunch of sounds together, you know, because every now and then Dan will get a little bee in his bonnet. Whatever the young kids say these days. I don't even know what the kids talk about bees or bonnets these days.
They say like some kind of skibbity or something.
Yeah, skibbity toilet instead of bees and bonnets. But Dan will get a bee in his bonnet, figuratively, of course.
not
sounds,
actually.
And he'll take a bunch of sounds. He'll be all like, ah, da, da, da,
take a bunch of sounds.
And they sound all cool together. You know, it's like this. They'll like overlay them and stuff.
Algae puffs.
Yeah,
algae puffs.
And then you killed her.
Algae puffs.
And then you killed her.
How's that one?
Yeah, it was all right.
It won't happen again.
I always enjoy it. I always enjoy
They're getting kind of strange. They're getting kind of strange. They're getting kind of strange. They're getting kind of strange.
Rory member.
And it was wonderful. And it was wonderful.
That's hard. Too hard. That's,
you think algae puffs are a little bit fishy tasting?
They taste like, they probably taste of the sea. They seem like they
taste of the pond.
All I could think of were those veggie fries, like bag chips. They're not chips, but you know those puffy snack in a bag that they're like shaped like fries. They're like you know Andy Cap.
Veggie sticks.
Do they still call them Andy Cap? Is that still? Do they still call those?
You mean those about
the cartoon character that beats his wife?
Yeah, and he has the
he
fries.
Gets drunk and goes home and just beats the shit out of his wife. That
Or do they still have the hot fries named after that character?
I'm not 100% sure if the character is still involved, but they do have hot fries.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering. Yeah, because it used to be Andy Cap's hot fries. Yeah.
I don't think I'm not sure if they still have the character or not, because I'm not sure if they wanted to.
It seems like they wouldn't have that anymore.
Well, you don't necessarily want to associate your tasty hot fries snack with spousal abuse.
Well, I mean, but like,
is that what the deal with that guy was?
But I think that was the deal with Andy Cap, wasn't it?
Yes, right.
Did he beat his wife in the head and he like kicked dogs on the way home? Wasn't that like the whole joke?
Yeah, but people didn't care about stuff like that back then.
No, they cared. They thought it was funny, I think. Yeah, I think that was the punchline. The punchline is that like he socked his wife in the jaw.
Everybody voted for Nixon.
No, I know. What I'm saying is they didn't care, as meaning they didn't get angry about it. They thought it was funny.
Yeah.
And the name Andy Cap is also probably not something.
Because he like kneecaps people.
I don't think that's why they called him Andy Cap.
Wasn't that his job? I thought that was his job during the day. Like, he kneecapped people all day, then he got drunk at the bar, and then he went home and socked his wife in the jaw.
And he got some hot fries.
Yeah.
This may be a deliberate act.
Indeed.
I have nothing to say to you.
Anyways, point being is, when you talk about algae puffs, I think about those hot fries, but they make veggie versions of hot fries that are like green and
I thought
stuff.
You were talking about the snap peas. You know,
those are good, too.
Not real snap peas, but the chip ones.
Harvest peas.
Crisps, or whatever they're called in your jurisdiction. They might have different names in different jurisdictions.
You know, I don't care what anyone says. I like Sun Chips. I think they're good.
Sun Chips are good.
They're just... Yeah. They're horrifically unhealthy. They're like way worse for you than...
These people have no conscience.
Just like some straight-up potato chips.
Intensely bad?
I didn't know that.
I just love that people are like... The people are like, hey, it's got the word sun in it or some shit. It must be... It's multigrain. It's like, it's multigrain. It's like fried and just like grossness.
It's unthinkable.
Nah, it's tasty.
Do we want to talk more about that scene, or do we want to move on to Sex Dream?
You're all ready to go. How about this? Let me insert one thing before the sex dream, because I think it'll lead well into the sex
dream. Are you going to insert it?
Very blue.
Wait.
Very blue.
Are you going to insert it? Because if you do...
Please, this has to come out.
Oh my God. You and your blue humor.
Blue.
I think it's funny. We see this recurring trope in Star Trek of a Starfleet officer oversleeping.
It was the second time.
And the fact that they've overslept is a shortcut indicator to show that something terrible is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, because everybody's always punctual.
Exactly. They're all Starfleet officers, and it's so out of character.
They show up early.
Yeah, it's so out of character to be late for your shift. That when somebody oversleeps, it's like, oh my God, are they under the control of an alien?
Right. Yeah, I know.
An alien creature?
They're having sex dreams.
Have they got some sort of disease? Is this a trans-dimensional portal opening up?
Yeah, Chakotay wasn't even mad,
Are they being kidnapped by creepy, clicky aliens
and
having surgery done?
That's fine.
Yeah, Chakotay was like, oh, I guess she's going to bed early to...
Tell me about
that's what's so weird. It's like, first of all, that she went to bed early just so she... I mean, I get it. They're really realistic dreams. But it's kind of funny, even though they're super realistic, the idea that you're going to go to bed early to get back to your sex dream.
Yeah. Now, is what made that exchange creepy? The writers, or is it Robert Beltran, or is it the character of Chakotay?
I think at the root it is, though, kind of unusual, I would think, to talk about such things with your superior officer, even though having not been in the military, and even though they are kind of in an unusual scenario where they're forced to get really close with each other. So I guess it makes sense. But yeah, something about the Chakotay thing was all like, and I'm gonna tell on you, and she's like, when he said like, I'm gonna tell on you, he looked all serious, but he was just being weird and creepy.
It seems like traditionally, that's the kind of thing you share with another crew member,
or somebody more at your
level. That's the same rank as you, or
yeah,
not.
I'm not a girl.
Not the second.
I'm not a woman though, so I don't know if that's what women do with each
other.
Well,
fair enough.
You haven't seen that film, What Women Want?
No. I've only saw part of it. I've only saw part of it.
Right. Yeah, somehow has it.
To tell the truth, I haven't seen it at all.
I'm
saw the preview for it.
I'm only saw part of it.
I think I vaguely remember that movie from like what, way long ago. Wow. 30
Suffice to say, we certainly can speak for women because we're all feminists. Yes. So we can speak on behalf of women because we are.
I think we know what to say.
We're allies.
We know exactly what to say about women.
Right, so she was, she kept telling him, first she told him, after she was late for the second time.
And this is not a list.
No, this isn't a list.
This is just a recounting.
This is a series of facts.
This is you making an editorial critique.
We're making a podcast.
Precisely.
It's called a podcast.
That's right. You are using your critical skills to analyze discuss this episode.
So I think one of the things that was creepy about Chakotay / Robert Beltran was when he said...
So they're enjoyable. Stimulating.
That was fucking weird.
Yeah, it was a little, yeah.
I didn't like it.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
It ruined the dreams.
She goes, she says, these are the most sensual dreams I've ever had in my life, and they feel absolutely real. Like, there's no...
Klingons don't dream.
There's no bones about it. She's not hiding anything. She's letting... And she talks about how she's in love with the guy. Yeah. They're really sensual.
Right.
Like, there's no, like, I wonder if they're sex dreams. Like, they are sex dreams. We know it. Right. He knows it.
If you were having dreams like that, are you just going to start spouting off to, like, fucking Chakotay?
Well, that's my point. That's my point, right? You know, like she knows it, but, like, he knows it, too, and now they get to talk about it together, and they get to be all, maybe they're just really close buds.
I don't think so.
Then
they are in a sense, but
a
little weird.
And then also when
she's getting all boned
when up. She's talking about like kissing her lover, she's like, I was kissing my lover, you know. It's just like I was kissing my lover, yeah, you know.
It's a very good Balanatoria. I was impersonation
kissing, I was kissing my lover the other day, and it was very sensual, it was stimulating. And I think I'm in love with my lover.
Was that
Lana's on it?
Before or after his skin sloughed off?
That was actually right before his skin sloughed off. That was that scene. So yeah,
full body deglovement. Hey, folks, you want to have a bad time? But, look up the medical term.
Don't,
degloving.
Don't do it. Don't say
look
that.
At Jess, don't let
do
it. Up.
Don't say that shit.
I advise against it. I advise.
Oh my
against
god, that's such a bullshit.
People,
I told you not to look.
don't look up degloving.
You don't. Okay,
you will have a very bad day.
Yeah, exactly. You don't do that. You don't do that, and then like try to like, you know, not take any responsibility afterward when they look, because that's a trick, man. But it wasn't just B'Elanna. Like when Janeway,
the sensation was just a little. Yeah. Overwhelming.
He gave her sex feelings when she was trying to they were playing music.
Yeah, that was fucked up.
He gave
too.
Her sex feelings there. Now, technically, I guess you could say they weren't sex feelings, but they
it was invasive.
They manifested themselves as sex feelings. I think
all three of us.
They've been in the Delta Quadrant a long time.
To varying degrees.
They presented as sex feelings. The strong feelings presented as sex.
I think all three of us have been in musical scenarios in which that so-called the angel's voice or whatever they call it, you know, when everything's harmonizing and there's that like extra little vibration. Like,
of course.
I think I know what you're talking about.
I think everyone's had, I think it's not uncommon for music to be associated with a sort of sensual, even ecstatic, let's say an ecstatic feeling, which can overlap.
Your big toe shoots up in your boot.
What?
Well, I was just going to say it overlaps with sort of sexual feelings, but yes, your big toe ends up in your boot.
Is that something that I should be knowing?
No, Jesse, it's probably some Civil War phrase.
Yeah, that's right.
Little Richard used to say that.
Oh, Little Richard.
Okay.
That's what's up.
Well, that was wonderful.
So I was more forgiving of it in the Janeway context because, first of all, Janeway herself was making these exclamations immediately after having the experience in front of everybody.
It was in front of everyone. That makes it more uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yes, but it also makes it like, it's not unusual for her to have made some comment
about
it.
She's the captain.
And she was still fairly restrained about it, as opposed to, as you noted.
Right. She wasn't late to fucking duty, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. As opposed to B'Elanna's just like, man, these dreams are getting me so fucking worked up that I don't, you know, I'm sorry I'm late, but hey.
Hey.
I didn't want to wake up.
This is most uncomfortable, Captain.
I think it's made more uncomfortable when the full context is understood that this is one of those Romeo and Juliet, except Juliet turns Romeo into the Nazis.
Yeah, I know.
And watches Romeo get his skin degloved, burned off, vaporized.
I for some reason, I got a kick out of this part.
That's why we keep this gate here, to remind us never to be stubborn and backward.
I know they were going for that, but like something about it just sounded like it sounded so like blatant. I don't know how to describe it. It was just
it was an interesting cadence.
It was a little bit over the top in a way, but at the same time, it amused me just stubborn or backwards.
Well, it accentuated the absurdity of the statement.
Yeah, I know, but I kind of liked it.
Yeah, but when you know what this story is all about. Then the weird focus on the sensuality and the sexiness at the beginning. I got nothing wrong with sexiness. I like sexiness.
No, you don't.
I do. I'm a big fan of the sexiness.
It's good stuff.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah. That's why I like they got the 1960s producers.
It's why you like the wine boys. Yeah.
It holds your interest.
Because some androids. The androids, but they got boobs.
You like the wine boys?
Boobs.
Right, one android looks like the guy from fucking the Addams Family, but the others have nice, beautiful boobs.
You like the wine boys because it's sexy? You think the wine voice is... You like the wimes?
What about that voice that's all like... Jizzy.
You like the worm voice because you like the face worms?
No, I was just about to say, I like the worm voice until you bring the face worms into it.
Is the face worm?
You start bringing I don't know where that came from.
What is face worms?
This is a more recent addition to the worm voice, is this whole face worms.
Is the worms in the face is what you think is sexy?
What is worms in the face?
Is that what you find attractive?
It sounds like you gotta go to the doctor.
When you have sex dreams with Milana, do you wish she had face worms?
Face worms.
Well, that being said,
I'm really happy for you.
All that business, sexiness is fine, but you know you want it to be used at the appropriate amount. So here they're trying to convey to us that Bellana's having dreams about a youthful relationship, again Romeo and Juliet style, with somebody outside of
like Dathan,
outside of her class and ethnicity, it seems, or whatever you want to describe it, and that it's passionate and it's forbidden. That's an excellent story, but like they keep doing it over and over again. It's not, they could have just been like, oh yeah, they have this cute relationship, but it's like there's multiple sexy scenes and she's, and the way she describes it to Chakotay is weird, and the way Chakotay reacts to it is weird.
Yeah. The last scene, the very last scene in this episode, it felt like it was simultaneously like they were running out of time, but also padding it out somehow. If that was possible to simultaneously pad something out and also run out of time, that's what the last scene felt like to me.
Not to get too meta here, Dan, but could you explain that in more detail?
Not to get too meta. Well,
I'm not trying to pad out this episode.
Ooh, meta.
Because, like, I get it. Okay, so, like, first of all, like, where did this episode end up? It ended up, like, I mean, the whole thing about B'Elanna at the end, she was trying to sort of, like, she kept, like, she didn't really handle that the best way I think she could have handled that, you know, just sort of storming into the room and basically saying, like...
But it's in character.
Right.
It is in character for B'Elanna to do precisely that.
Yeah, that's right. And,
And Janeway said she might have even done the same thing in the same situation.
So she goes into the celebration and she accuses everyone of those people of treachery. Established that's probably not the best way to go about it, but that's what B'Elanna does. And then she jumps to the conclusion that he used her mind brain to find Jorah Morell, right?
That's how
he was able to kill her, right? And I don't doubt that this is true, but like, how would she know that? Was there something else that Jorah Morell told her through telepathy that would say that she, like, how would she know?
I think it's meant to be ambiguous.
And she's just assuming that that's what happened. And
I like that ambiguity. That's a thing I liked about this episode, was that I think we're meant to believe that they did the genocide. But I think beyond that, we don't know if they murdered this old lady or if the old lady just died.
And the thing, but B'Elanna is so convinced that it happens. And then at one point, she's, Tuvok goes like, you know, there's no evidence to support what you're talking about.
Evidence.
There's no, absolutely no
evidence.
Okay, let's do it.
You man, you piece of shit.
Sabotage.
Chief O'Brien.
Oh my
evidence!
God.
So
pretty good.
He says there's no evidence that this happened.
Evidence!
And then didn't B'Elanna basically say something like, well, they could have used their mind powers to like change the truth
around. She suggested it as a hypothesis.
As a hypothesis. But by that same rationale, you could say like somebody else used mind powers to fuck up, to give B'Elanna false memories.
And so her Janeway didn't go for it.
Well, she didn't use, but yeah, she
because didn't. Because it doesn't make sense.
Well, she didn't specifically say she didn't go for it because of what I just said right then. But it's just like B'Elanna wasn't seeing that, like, the same thing she's accusing them of, she could be just as guilty of. And I'm not trying to gaslight her in any way, but it gets tricky to prove these things when telepathy is your only evidence, you know?
No, I don't disagree. And I think that another strength of this episode is the whole scene with Janeway basically walking B'Elanna through the fact of saying like, hey, you're not necessarily wrong, but there's nothing we can do about it for moral reasons, for practical reasons, for legal reasons. Mm-hmm. These are all the reasons why life just kind of sucks sometimes. You got to come up with some other way to solve this problem.
And right before, like at the end when she's like, come to my office later. Yeah. Like, it sounded like she was all pissed, but then she turns around and is like, you know what? I believe you. At first I thought she was going to do the thing where it's like, I believe that you believe that you saw these things, but no, she didn't say that.
I believe that you believe these things.
She said, I believe you. Like, I believe what you said, you know? And so this is all relating to the final scene and the first, okay, I think it's about saying about the ambiguity. I think that, Patrick, what you said about that is basically what I'm stabbing at is that, like, you know, it's the whole thing is sort of ambiguous, and the way it ends with her, it's like, well, it's all ambiguous. They're getting it back. How are we going to give some sort of resolution to this? And the resolution was that she was able to implant that memory into someone else. And like, look, I guess it was the point of the episode not to tell us what happens after that. We're supposed to draw our own conclusions, but something about that, the way they implemented, still felt a little rushed to me. And so that's why I felt the ending seemed rushed, because like, it was like they just kind of showed the scene. They kind of showed it happen. And it's just like, I just felt like maybe it was missing one more thing. I guess maybe that was their point, is to leave it like that. And I'm not saying they had to spell everything out perfectly, but I think they I don't know. It just felt...
You're saying this should have segued into an episode of Columbo.
I think this should have been like a season-long arc.
Oh, no. It's been a while since...
just crazy.
Dark side.
It's been a while since Dan's gone on this whole
B'Elanna's on it.
Season-long arc business.
No, okay, so that's how I felt it might have been a little bit like they didn't have enough time. But the way it was padded out was that final scene, the fact that they kept playing that dream sequence out the whole way, which, by the way, I measured it and it was pretty close to real time. Like, I think the scenes were about like they've shot them really close,
I get what you're saying too, because I had the same thought. I was like, man, how long are they going to do this scene to demonstrate that the memory has transferred? And I really dug how long they let it go, because of it ended on a good, I don't know, a good note. It tied they needed to go all the way, and then I know they wanted to start with her waking up and throwing the covers off.
So I think it went for about 26 seconds, and it mirrors, like I said, it mirrors the first one with B'Elanna pretty closely, because the dream starts, and about 19 seconds after the dream starts, she goes, "What took you so long?" In both of them, it took about 19 seconds, and for a total of 26. So they did a good job, but sorry, I interrupted you.
I think that's really cool. Thanks for timing that out.
Yeah, because, I haven't gotten to time something out in a long time.
I know, and you like timing
like when
out.
They say like 10 seconds, and you gotta, or like there you have 53.27 seconds. Was what Spock said, shit like Spock, that. Until this happens, you know, and then you have to, it's like, did it really take that long in audience time or is it people time?
People time!
Holograms?
Gotta watch out for people time.
Yeah, but she released her body, and so all B'Elanna really accomplished this episode was fucking up not only trade negotiations but shore leave. That's all that ended up here.
No, but I mean, the principle is you don't want to go on shore leave with the Nazi people.
I know, but like, you know, what you don't know can't hurt you. Yeah. You know, I'm not saying
really liked the ending of this episode, because I thought it tied everything up nicely. It was relatively realistic in that it didn't give us the 100% happy ending, but it gave us the hopeful ending, because once the memory gets transferred to one person, she's going to get convinced, and then she can transfer it like a mind virus.
Yeah.
One can presume that the secret is not going to stay a secret. That doesn't mean it changes their society. It doesn't mean that who knows, maybe it causes other problems, but you can at least infer a few paths that end up in a more positive way for these people to reconcile their horrific not too distant past with their contemporaneous or contemporary, whatever their cultural successes may or may not be.
Where would I stay?
Slow-ass warp drive people. You want to go over some of the other episodes
Well, I was going to say real quick, along the same similar lines, so this episode had two things that happened we must assume happened telepathically because it wasn't explained. One of them I mentioned, that B'Elanna knew to search...
You don't want to give Jesse and I a chance to guess?
Oh, okay. I didn't present it as a game, but like...
Oh, shit.
But let's
now I'm on the spot.
Let's make it a game.
I think B'Elanna knew to search... the ladies' room? Was that where she looked in that ladies'
room? The ladies' room.
In that lady?
Do they have a ladies' room?
I don't get it.
You don't get it.
I don't get it.
No. B'Elanna knew to search for
You're making some funny faces, but you've lost me sort of...
Do you have any guesses, Jesse?
What was that again?
Okay, I'm just going to say it. So one of the things we must assume happened telepathically because it wasn't explained was that B'Elanna knew to search for Jorah Morell after waking up from one of her memory dreams right after she was killed.
Like it was because of the cut. She knows because Jorah Morell had a prominent scar on her cheek when B'Elanna's character as Corinna got a deep cut on her cheek. She made the connection. She's like, oh, I'm Jorah Morell.
Are you sure about that cut thing?
Yep.
I didn't make that connection. Am I just stupid?
No.
No, you're not stupid.
Am I stupid?
No.
Are you guys saying I'm stupid?
I never said
There's
so.
A great deal of evidence.
There's some other stupid
evidence
against the proposition that you are stupid. However, you may be inattentive.
I don't get it.
You may have been distracted.
I don't get it.
You may have been tired and shagged out after a long squawk.
Hollywood. I don't get it.
And when you watched this episode, just didn't catch that Jorah Morell had on her right cheek a fairly prominent scar.
Yikes.
Okay, so... okay, that's how we're supposed to know that she knew to talk to Jorah Morell. I don't remember, when did they point out Jorah Morell's scar?
Like, just her walking around.
No, bullshit, you're making this up.
It's on her cheek.
You're making this up.
Do a Google image search.
You just see that shit.
Okay, there's no way that they can expect the audience to put that together. I think that the only reason she knew Jorah Morell was in trouble because she sensed because Jorah Morell gave her brain connection waves or something and she was able to feel it.
Or it was the scar in her cheek.
I thought it was because it was through telepathy, like she could feel it. Because telepathy, she could feel it.
I get that you thought that.
She was like, oh, I'm getting through telepathy. I can feel it. I can smell it.
You can feel it through telepathy.
Okay, well, you disagree. Oh, that's fine.
Telepathy is not about smelling.
No, you can smell it. That's from Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
Okay. Number two.
Is it raw or delirious?
I always remember not which one.
They all kind of run together.
Yeah. The second one then. Okay. How about explain this one, fucking Einstein? Okay. Jor-Brel, who's the guy who gave Janeway sex feelings.
You mean the fellow who was on like Eight Is Enough and like a bunch of other
shows?
He was one of those guys on a million shows. Mm.
Yeah. Well, he used, Jor-Brel used mind brain to telepathic that Jor-Brel.
I like when you have trouble reading your notes considering they are typed notes.
I know.
Like
my handwriting
is bad. Jesse handwrites his notes and never has a problem reading them.
I gotta stop using Wingdings. That's the problem is I use Wingdings.
Are you using Notepad
Plus? Why are you using
no
Wingdings?
That's the problem is I'm not using Notepad Plus.
Trying Notepad
Google Documents, it's not doing me a very good job.
Like, you use Linux.
It's more like a Notepad minus if you ask me.
Yeah, that voice.
Hey, Jesse. What are you doing? Hey, Jesse, what are you doing? I'm having a hard time reading my notes.
Hey, Dan, your notes are typed on a computer screen.
So we just have to assume that Jor-Brel used her brain to telepathically find Jorah Morell so he could kill her. But I guess B'Elanna, we kind of get told that. But like when we're watching it, at the time we're watching it, there's no way for us to know how that Jor-Brel used her mind to find it. And I know it's like a mystery or whatever, but it's like there's
use
no
your
way
mind to find it.
I don't know.
My interpretation was that because B'Elanna had brought this problem to the old dude and explained the memories, that the old dude knew enough to know, oh, that sounds like what's her name? Jor-El? Jor-El?
Jor-El is the dude.
And what's the lady's name? The old lady?
Jorah Morrell. There's Jorah Morrell and Jor-El. All
right, so but Jor-El, yeah. I think he probably was like, you know what? That sounds kind of like her upbringing. Mm. Maybe he even knows about the
I think they're expecting the audience to assume a little too much for those parts.
I think that's a fair critique. A fair critique. There are some shortcuts taken here. Mm-hmm. There are.
You must try some of these delightful algae puffs.
Indeed. But we don't want to take a shortcut when it comes to a break. Did that make any sense? That didn't really make any sense, did it?
We'll take a break cut.
I'm trying to come up. I'm not coming up with a good segue because the clock is ticking, but we do need to take a break. So how about this? Let's go ahead. We're going to do that, and then we will conclude our discussion. We have, I think, a list of evil business, and then we have some duty or no duties that we won't forget this week, and a few other concluding points. So all that and more when we get back.
Fuck off.
No, don't fuck off. It's a podcast, so you can just stay. You don't need to change the channel or anything. And you definitely
don't touch that dial.
You don't want to miss out on the duty or no duty.
Don't change the frequency.
Indeed. What's the frequency, Kenneth?
Is it amplitude modulated or frequency modulated?
Yeah. All right.
Is it an ultra high frequency or is it a very high frequency?
Ultra.
Right. We're from the 1980s. We'll be right back.
Leave it all behind.
And we're back.
What took you so long?
I was kissing him, my lover.
That was the longest break ever.
That was a lot of Jesse noises you decided to just start making. Just kept going like thubba, 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 thubba.
I don't know what your point is.
You're going like thubba, 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 thubba.
Was Jesse tub thumping?
What's your point?
Just going like squirk, squirk, thubba, 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 thubba.
I was squirting in your face. Right.
Squibber, squibber.
We've got a few things to go over, a few lists and other activities.
Of course.
But very, very quickly, I did bring up a couple other episodes that I think this episode draws from. We already mentioned the Muse, and the Muse is a little bit more indirect, but the Muse is a story about story, right? And for a good chunk of this episode, B'Elanna's motivation seems to be, at least in large part, curiosity as to how this story in her dreams is going to end. It was almost like a meta tale. Yeah. It was kind of interesting. And the Muse is a little bit like that, a story about storytelling. There are also some similarities to TNG's Violations. That episode where they're carrying some telepathic people and a telepathic guy mind rapes Troy. It's like a terrible situation. Mm-mm. Now this is not that.
No.
It's not exactly that. It's something actually, you know, it's now it's about genocide. You know, it's another very serious heavy topic.
I'm very glad to hear that.
But definitely some flavors there. And then of course there are similarities to the Inner Light. Where the idea of an important memory being...
I know it is hard to face, but you have to. It is too important.
Transferred into somebody for the purpose of saving a civilization in some sense or another. So those were kind of the three that jumped out at me. I'm sure there are other examples that this draws from Star Trek as well as...
You really like this episode like a lot.
No, I don't. I enjoy it. I think it's a decent episode. I think it's a pretty good episode.
He's trying to downplay it.
It's derivative because, as I just mentioned, it is pulling these stories from other places, but putting it together in an interesting combination.
Totally.
Gives B'Elanna something fun to do, although she's...
B'Elanna's on it.
B'Elanna is not unusual for B'Elanna to have to play a different version of herself. It's happened a few times.
B'Elanna's on it.
Including it's kind Voyager, of in Muse. It's got, remember we were talking about Voyagers always having these crazy dream sequences. This is another example where there's dream sequences.
Yeah, you're right.
Wasn't it In the Flesh?
No, you're lying.
I forget. There's a lot of recent Voyagers that we've discussed had some form of dream sequence action.
This may be a deliberate act.
There's not much to do out there in the... They're all lost in space.
Might be. So yeah, there's derivative elements to it.
Don't let the memories die.
You can make some guesses pretty early on as to where things are going, but and there's that Chakotay stuff. I agree is weird, but other than that, there's
intensely bad.
Get some solid stuff here. It's an interesting story. I think it makes a good point, a scary point. I think it makes one of those sadly altogether continues to be relevant points about how otherwise good people can slip into horrific behaviors and can appear to be the nicest, most generous, most wonderful people. And it turns
You'll change your mind when you see the Daily's cliffs at dawn.
The Damien's cliffs at dawn.
That's what changed their mind. That's why she decided to go back to the side of her father, because she saw the Daily's cliffs at dawn. That's what changed her mind. Before she saw that, she was really into Dathan. After she saw those cliffs, she was like, no, we got to send them away.
Well, and there is a moral tale about the ease at which people can drift into horrific fascism and genocidal abuse of whole groups of people.
These people have no conscience.
Which is ironic because they're the ones who had no conscience.
Well, he's the total projector. Jareth,
he's the projector.
Everything that Jareth says about those people are things that he's doing. So there's that lesson.
But, do you really believe that your family and friends are capable of that?
But in addition to the episode clearly stating the thesis of the episode that is that genocide is not good.
It's no good, man.
But in addition, they have the lesson.
We're being slaughtered.
Which I mentioned before, of Janeway going through her points about why, in her opinion, that they can't really do anything more. Mm-hmm. Now, Janeway wasn't against doing something. She encouraged B'Elanna to do exactly what B'Elanna did, which was effectively...
B'Elanna Banana?
Effectively.
Banana.
She created a mind virus.
Mind virus.
Yes,
she did.
Memory mind virus, which may improve the situation.
Don't let the memories die.
So that's cool. But yeah, it made to me the arguments were at least sensible arguments. You could quibble with them or say that doesn't matter. The morality means you must do something more. But it's like, what are you going to do? Attack the planet?
They could have used their telepathy somehow.
Like, I don't know. It just sounds like I think the biggest argument from Janeway was more of a practical one. But she also pointed out, hey, it's their business. It's fucked up, but it's their business. You know, what are you supposed to do?
But weren't you arguing, though, like there was the episode with Worf's brother, the dude who was Paulie on Goodfellas.
Yes.
And the
I was about to say move along home. It's totally not.
But the sort of the conflict in that episode was like the Prime Directive. Yeah. Like, should you help these people? And like Picard was like, we can't help them because of the Prime Directive. And Patrick, I remember during that podcast, you were arguing that they should have broke the Prime Directive in order to help these people. So this is different, though. She's like, we're not going to help these people. It's a little different because one's like a political Well, not just a political, just straight up war, you know. So one's a war. The other is more cut and dry because with Worf and his brother, they were just saving people from being like some natural disaster.
My argument in that episode, which was, what is that episode? Home? Might be home. No.
That's it's Worf's brother. Yeah. Polly. Worf's brother, Polly.
I know that. My, what's that
it's called
name?
My brother, Polly.
Paul Sorvino.
Polly, my Kadich.
But in that...
No, wait. Is Kadich, that's a Worf thing, right?
That's a Klingon thing.
Bakish.
Eat the quiche with my Kadich.
In that episode, my argument against applying what I thought was a misapplication by Picard of the Prime Directive is that those people were going to be 100% exterminated. Mm-hmm. And the point of the Prime Directive
100%
is to protect a species, a group of people's capacity for making their own decisions, at least up to a point. Now, there's all these philosophical, legal, and practical arguments you can have about.
Well, that's what these people do.
Prime Directive too.
I mean, that's what the Inarans did in this episode, and they did the whole fucked up thing where they were like trying to like say that like they're not doing that. Everything is their idea, you know, and they like it better this way.
Which is clearly like, a lie.
The whole time they
more
went
like annoying.
The whole time they went with the lie of like, yeah, they want to move. Yeah, they're glad to move. Yeah. Oh, they didn't die because we killed them. They died because they're stupid.
They're dirt people.
They just didn't make it.
It was like they're because they're.
That's why we keep this gate here, to remind us never to be stubborn and backward.
Stubborn and backward.
Yeah, that actually has a double effect because it keeps people inward too. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's what walls do. They keep them out and keep you in. Yeah, but
it's an artificial separation.
But anyways, yeah. So, and I think part of the thing though too wasn't just that she. It was their business. It was also like there was no plausible
evidence,
like there was no evidence to support, so I think it was both, like the fact there was no evidence and plus there was too many questions.
It's about racism.
I mean, and again, like
if they knew for certain, if they saw them murder a bunch of people, maybe they Voyager might have gotten involved then.
But again, what would the resolution be, like the what's the mechanism for action for a lone Voyager with no starbase to refuel or anything? They're gonna
attack
a whole planet.
That's true.
And these people are technically technologically sophisticated. They've got slow warp, but everything else is
not even one of the
advanced.
Bigger ships of the fleet.
Yeah, so it's just sort of like, okay, what's the plan here? We're supposed to what? Just like beam holograms at them, being like, you guys are assholes. You're all assholes. I don't know. I appreciate that it's not a happy ending in that sense, in that you would like to see some sort of retribution, and all they give you is a thread of hope that in time something may have been set in motion by Voyager's interaction with them and B'Elanna transferring this memory that she had gotten from
good
the
old Star Trek
because
hope.
B'Elanna makes the point, I think quite correctly, is it's not just this one woman who has this memory. Thousands, no doubt, hundreds of thousands of people might feel guilty about their participation. And so maybe this memory was transferred just in time to the youth to go seeking out transferring memories from their meemaws and peepaws, whatever they call them locally. And that could set off a whole revolution. That's totally plausible.
I don't get it.
Well, will it happen? We don't know. But at least it's plausible. But it allows us to have a little bit of hope while preserving the, again, more realistic, real politic version of things that Janeway has to deal with all the time. Janeway's such a great captain in part because of their scenario, she's often having to deal with some some crazy shit and make some pretty fucked up decisions.
Yep.
I mean, Tuvix, of course, is a famous one.
That's right at the top of the list.
Right?
That was wonderful.
But yeah, you gotta...
I might have done exactly the same thing.
That's a Janeway-ism right there. Remember one episode we played, what is that so Janeway? That's pretty Janeway.
Exactly.
I might have done exactly the same thing.
Like she says that and you're like, of course.
You gotta bring back that's why Janeway.
She brought you.
We gotta play another
There wasn't a lot of Janeway in this episode. Yeah. This was a B'Elanna happy episode.
I believe that the memories you experienced were real. He specifically looked for evidence to support your accusations.
He didn't find them.
Evidence!
All right. What's the list? List of evil Jareth business.
Yeah, this is actually... I haven't reviewed this list, and I think it's just quoting from the episode, so it's not even really... I'll try to do the thing where I read it really fast, and you kind of put together what based upon the words I skip.
Not fast enough.
I'm going to skip words. So, I don't know if this is... We might want to stop this list at halfway through.
Stop this list!
This is two lists in a row where Dan's like, this is some fucked up bullshit list.
Yeah. This isn't a good
Everyone's
idea.
Everyone's
going
to hate me.
I'm supposed to sell this shit. I'm supposed to be like, this is the best list of all time. I'm not doing... Supposedly. I'm not doing what you're supposed to do in show business, because we're in show business.
I know.
Totally don't.
It wasn't our choice.
When Torres says, what isn't fair that you treat him like everyone else? He's different. If you just talk to him, you'd understand that in reference to Dathan.
He's different from the other rat people.
And then Jareth goes, you know, one of the things I love about you most is your compassion for others. Dathan. Like, that's an evil thing to say. Like, to take, like, it's condescending,
right.
You know, and he's trying to, like, compliment her, but also, like, use it to put her down to say that she's naive, basically.
You know what this guy, that's
your flaw. And he goes, you're still young. You don't realize there's people who might take advantage of that. And promise me if you go up to him again, you'll just walk away, you know.
He's a bad
classic
dad.
Bad guy.
He's a bad dad.
Bad dad
behavior.
So that was Evil Jareth number one. Evil Jareth number two was this one.
Finish your Taran juice. It's good for you.
That was just like sort
What's
of
Taran juice.
That's sort of nailing home like him like he treats her like a child.
Do you think Taran juice is made from fresh squeezed human?
Squeeze weasels?
Squeeze weasels, what? What is that?
Well,
a band?
I said Taran because it's, you know, Taran
is
means human.
Maybe use some kind of Taran squeeze weasel.
I was thinking the same thing, like Taran, yeah. But Jesse distracted me with squeeze weasel. Is that the name
me
of,
as well.
Is that the name of a band or something?
No, it should be, though.
The squeeze weasels.
Maybe that could be our band.
The squeeze weasels. I like that. Squeeze weasel. Isn't that funny? Squeeze weasel. Squeeze weasel.
Totally.
Just start walking around all day going, squeeze weasel.
That's
squeeze
how you make special drinks.
Do it until they don't sound like words anymore. They're just weird sounds.
Squeeze weasel.
Squeeze weasel. Squeeze weasel. Okay. Yeah.
It messes with your head.
Yeah. Today, the third is when he's talking to the second dream, talking to the soldiers. He's like, today, with the advent of terraforming, we stand ready to take another leap forward into an era of expansion colonialism. You will show us the way. There are some who will resist.
That's bad news.
Do not let the voices of fear and ignorance discourage you. Claim your rightful place as leaders in the new era. The future of Inara is in your hands. He's making them.
That's fascist.
He's making the people who don't agree with like their own business. Like, the Narans have their own business, and they're taking other people who want to do their own business as a threat. Mm-hmm. Instead of just like, they're doing their shit, we're doing doing our shit. There's like, no, they're a threat. And on top of that, he's telling the civilians that they're the leaders. Of course, the future leaders. But he's trying to make them feel like the leaders when all this is manufactured by like him and his crew. Yeah. Like, they're not the leaders. They're just like being handed like some bullshit that he fucking
this
did.
This is a classic tactic.
Right.
You create racial hierarchies and you reinforce them through propaganda.
Yeah.
And by creating the racial hierarchies, you can step on somebody's neck as long as you tell them that they get to step on somebody else's neck.
Right.
Yep.
Because people
just a crazy idea.
Are
that's how you maintain often control.
Awful. Well, I was about to say people are stupid, but to be fair, people are scared.
Yikes. Right?
People are like, okay, my neck's getting stepped on, but it seems like it's going to get stepped on one way or the other. So maybe it gets stepped on less if I step on this other person's neck. A lot of people, unfortunately, think that's a good deal.
I'm not joking, Lee.
Yeah, I know.
Number four, Torres goes, this is all voluntary, right? They want to be resettled. And he's like, Jareth goes, of course, although it's impossible to understand what these regressives want. They simply don't think like they don't think like we do. How do we relate to people who refuse all but the most primitive technology? Who lives their lives without a communication interlink or microfusion generators? I don't know.
The regressives.
And she's like, well, if that's how they want to live, why can't they? And Jareth goes, we can. That's why we're helping them to resettle, so they can be completely comfortable.
Resettle.
Practicing a
you
way of life.
You guys live over there now.
That they've chosen. And Torres goes, they could do that here in the village, you know.
Why
so basically,
you guys move away?
He's doing that thing where he's like trying to make it seem like, you know, it's like it's to their benefit. What they're doing is to their benefit. And
she's basically calling him out for saying like, none of what you're saying is making sense. That person could totally live in their house and do exactly what you're saying. Yeah. So that's when he eventually gets down to what you'll probably bring up when he's just like, they're diseased, filth, plague people.
Yep. And when
that's always where it comes down to is like, these people spread disease. You have to get rid of them if they spread disease.
Yeah. And to say that how do we relate to people who refuse all but the most primitive technology? It's just the wording he uses. Like, you don't have to relate to them.
By definition, it seems like it's like pretty fucking easy to not relate to these
people. It's okay to not be able to be like, hey, buddy, how was the game today? You know, I can't talk to him about the football game. About the what did they play? They probably play some
mind ball.
It's like, we don't get to talk to the
mind
Amish.
Ball. Yeah, that's what they were, right? Or Mennonites?
Beard or no beard?
Beard. That's the question.
Isn't it button or no button?
Button or no button?
Evidence.
Number five. There's 6 points, so we're running through this. Jareth goes, they have some twisted ideas about resisting progress, which they think give them the right to hold us back in any way they can. They're trying to undermine us to cause dissent and doubt. Just look at how they've affected you. And Berlana goes, what if they're saying, what? But what they're saying is so horrible. Oh, yeah, he's talking about like what they're saying is happening to him is so horrible. Okay, so he's like saying, he's saying they're trying to, okay, this is the point to pay attention. They're trying to undermine us to cause dissent and doubt. Basically saying like, that's what they're doing to us. And she's like, but they're so horrible. What's happening to him? And he goes later, he immediately contradicts himself actually, in the same conversation actually. I think it's like the next line actually, not later. He goes, yes, but it isn't plausible. He's like,
it's implausible.
He goes, Karina.
I'm sorry. Look, dude, I was totally letting it pass. I was totally letting it pass. I was fine with it. I wasn't going to laugh at all. But he laughed and made me laugh. I'm so sorry. I want to distance myself from Jesse.
I'm trying to ignore him right now, but it's proving to be impossible.
He's an imposing figure because he's older than us.
Proving to be implausible.
Okay.
So, yeah, a little secret for the audience at home. Jesse's like just like a little bit older than us.
Taller.
So Dan and I are intimidated by him.
Okay, I'm going to start at this point, number five. The point to focus on, he goes, they're trying to undermine us. They're trying to cause dissent and doubt. This is what they're trying to do. And then he immediately contradicts himself by saying, Belana's like, well, but what I hear is happening to him is so shitty. And he goes, but it's not plausible. He's like, Karina, think a secret conspiracy against their people, organized murder on such an enormous scale. Do you really believe your family and friends are capable of that? But that's what he's accusing them of. He's accusing them of trying to undermine and cause dissent. He's accusing them of a conspiracy and he's flipping it right around. So
classic. Exactly. Yeah. Classic propaganda.
Yeah.
Othering.
Contemporary parallel.
Tribalism. Fucked up in this.
Yeah, and then at the point, then the next part is just extra fucked up. He goes, I know how hard it is for you to accept that that anyone, even regressives, could lie about something like that, but it is all part... Okay, please.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to, you know...
I know.
I'm hyping it up.
I know, but last time that happened, this conversation got devolved into laughter, which is fine. I know, it's good that people laugh, I suppose.
Heaven forbid.
But he says it's all part of their manipulation. These people have no conscience, you know, and he's once again accusing them of conspiracy.
Dehumanizing, for lack of a better term, because it wouldn't be dehumanizing, it would be de-anarinizing or something, I don't know.
Yeah.
De-annoyanize.
This part, this is one I didn't review. I'm not sure where this one goes, but he goes, these people have no conscience. Okay, that's, and then it goes on to say, this is point six, they'll say anything to get what they want, like that boy Dathan. Has he told you, this is that whole 60-second scene of him just being like really fucked up. Like, he goes, has he told you he's in love with you? He's not. It's his way of gaining your sympathy, and not only yours. I've seen him talking to quite a number of young women.
Yeah,
has he been asking you to trust him? He's poisoning you against your own people, even your own family. That's very cruel. No wonder you've been confused, but now you understand what these people are really like. Like, there's and the way he delivers that is like makes it even like 10 times worse. But he's just like, the part he's like, he's poisoning you against your people. He goes, that's very cruel. Yeah. No wonder you, and he's accused, he's like, no wonder you're confused. Like, telling her what she is, you know?
And as the objective observer, we are creeped out because we know he's lying. We can see the propaganda because we are removed from the situation. But at the same time, because Bruce Davison does a great job, and because Roxanne Dawson does a great job, we can see why she might buy this, why she might be convinced by it, especially when you add in the very understandable, the very relatable ideas of being pulled between your family, who seem to be nice, your well-off family. Dad seems to be a nice guy by his behaviors. We know he's not, but like, he seems that way. Compared to this sexy like bit of a side piece.
Sexy side piece.
That she's got going on.
Has he told
on.
You he's in love with you? And, no wonder you've been confused.
And I think they don't really go into this. I think a more sophisticated version of this tale would make more overt, or I should say just make overt, this idea that part of her attraction to him in the end be revealed to be really just the forbidden nature of it. Mm-hmm. And that her betrayal of him is actually worse, potentially, I don't think this is in the text of the show, but I think it makes the story more interesting if part of this is that she realizes, you know what, I'm not actually this into this guy. Mm-hmm. I was into him because I'm kind of racist.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, she was fetishizing him? She was fetishizing, sleeping with, having a lover, having a romance.
Having a lover.
Romeo and Juliet, but in this case, a classmate.
Kissing him. My lover.
My lover.
Right?
But why did she have to add that little part, my lover, at the end when she was talking to Chakotay when she said it?
She's like, I was kissing
him. It's gotta be creepy.
You know the person I was kissing? My lover.
Just gotta, you know what, you gotta have Milano say her lover. She's gotta use the word lover. The kids are gonna eat that shit up.
My lover. My lover.
Jesse, how come you didn't like start saying like while Patrick was talking? You weren't going like
I was trying to rein it in.
Oh, conveniently when it's Patrick's turn.
You were telling me I should back off.
Oh, I wasn't trying. I wasn't saying, you're making me sound like an asshole.
No.
I was like, Jesse, back off, man.
That's a reasonable request.
Jesse.
Perhaps I was coming on too strong.
Jesse.
Interfering with your point.
Back off, man.
That's what I did.
Hey, man.
Hey, you know what we can't do? We can't forget.
So prove me wrong.
Duty or no duty?
We can't.
Because your list is done, right?
My list is done.
Let's
do some duty or no duty. We've been promising it. We forgot last week's duty or no duty. We got three this week, so.
All right, duty or no duty. Right, number one.
Listen close, Jesse, because last time we did this, Jesse and I were told our ears are crazy.
Yeah.
By most of our audience.
By the world.
Your ears got gaslit.
It was like multiple continents came together to agree that Jesse and I were wrong. Let's see if we can do better.
I believe that the memories you experienced were real.
Okay, that's not being wrong. Okay. Okay, number one, duty or no duty.
Your duty shift started 20 minutes ago. I tried to reach you on the comm, but you didn't answer.
Jesse.
Your duty shift started.
Duty or no duty? You don't usually go first.
Just to be clear, because it's been a while.
It's been a while.
If it's duty with a T, it's no duty. Right?
Yes, it's duty or no duty.
Wait, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be a dick, but you haven't picked up on this one yet?
You're just confirming.
Listen, man, I got a lot going on in my life, okay. And we haven't always done this every week, and I just need a little reinforcement.
You do it a lot. Okay, okay, no
so
problem.
So what say you, Jesse?
No duty.
No duty? You think it's a duty?
Yes.
Wait, okay, I'm going to play it again.
Your duty shift started.
It's not the strongest duty, but your duty shift started.
I say I'm going to look over here at Dan because I want to see what he...
I'm not going to get mad.
I
want
to see what he does.
I'm not going to get mad.
I think it's a duty.
I agree.
Ooh.
I think it's a duty.
I agree. Well, that's a duty. That's a big stinking duty.
Far out, dude.
Far out. Duty.
Stinking.
It's not duty. He says...
Your duty shift started...
He says duty. Okay, number... Mm-hmm. As in poo-poo. This is number two. This is number two. In case you don't know what duty is.
Hey, hey, hey.
This is number two. This is number two. This is poo-poo, otherwise known as number two.
That's funny. It's a feces joke.
That is. Because number two means poop. Number one means pee. Number three is something else.
I'm not concerned about the duty schedule, B'Elanna. If there's something wrong...
I'm fine.
The duty schedule. The duty schedule. The duty schedule.
Mm. What's a duty?
I say... Duty.
I say duty.
Duty. Okay. All right.
It's much clearer in that one.
Duty. Okay.
Two Chakotay ones too.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe that's just how he says it.
The third and final.
I'm giving you the next 2 days off duty. Use them to rest. Off duty. Off duty. Off duty.
That's a no duty for me.
I'm going to say no duty. That's a nice crisp tea.
I don't think it's crisp, but I do agree that it is a no duty.
Although,
I think it's on the border for me.
We might be primed to wanting to hear the tea because she says 2 days.
Oh, that's a good point.
As opposed to 2 days.
Off duty.
Okay, wait, let's hear the full one to see if that taints our brains.
Taint.
I'm giving you the next 2 days off duty. Use off duty to rest. Yeah. Off duty. Off duty. Off duty. I'm giving you the next 2 days off duty. Use them to rest.
You know
to
what?
Rest.
I feel like when I play the... I know I sound like I'm bullshitting, but I feel like when I play the longer one, the tea, it sounds more like duty to me.
Yeah.
Like when I play
the
this...
The tea is priming.
Like duty. We're
priming
to me.
Tea.
When I play this, it sounds more like... not. The longer one sounds like more like no duty.
I'm giving you the next 2 days off duty. Use them to rest.
Versus this one...
Off duty.
Which sounds more like duty. But I say no duty. No duty.
It's no duty.
I'm going to go with no duty. All right. Here's, you want to hear like a weird sound cut? It sounded weird. I'm going to play.
All right, you're offering it.
How about if I just cut you?
This is
how the soldiers treat regressives who won't go quietly. I know it is hard to face, but you have to. It is too important.
I'll play a shorter version.
Quietly. I know it is hard to... Quietly. I know it is hard to... How the soldiers treat regressives who won't go quietly. It is hard to face, but you have to. It is too important.
You can hear the cut.
That's in the episode, unedited.
Yeah, that was that's in the... Yeah, that was just in the episode.
That's
right?
A little weird. Did they change camera positions?
I don't know. I didn't actually check that, and I should have. If I wasn't an asshole, I would have done that, but I'm an asshole, so...
Oh.
I should check that, and I'll forget, but...
Well,
And speaking of... Oh, did you have a comment on that?
I was just going to say,
and I just like when Dathan, I like how he says this line.
Nobody I know has had any contact with this new colony we're supposed to be going to. Had any.
Hey, wait,
had
wait.
Any.
Is his name Dathan? Is like the opposite of Nathan?
Nathad.
Nathan? Like Nathan?
Oh, Dathan.
Dathan?
Except there's no Y.
Is it like Day Nathan. Jonathan and Night Jonathan?
Right. There's
like Dathan.
There's no Y.
And Nathan? Nathan?
There's no.
Ted.
I think Dan has exhausted all of his thoughts about this episode.
They're getting kind of strange.
I don't know. I think
I confess
covered.
I
we got most of it.
Well, we got most of it. Yeah. You guys, not so hot.
You. No.
I like it probably a little bit better than you guys,
Wait. I want to play the sound again. I like this part.
You.
No. No.
Even though it's really upsetting.
Yeah. It's like got horrific. Upsetting music in the back.
It is really upsetting music.
No.
Bed.
That's when she sees the burnt up boy.
This went on for a while.
Yeah, this is more fucked up than the episodes that had actual Nazis in it.
Yeah, right.
I know.
Right.
That's funny. All right. So that was Remember. We are now...
Betty Grable.
Betty Grable came around that corner. What part
Betty
of her
Grable.
Would you say?
Betty Grable.
What was the other one he said?
What do you mean?
He said there was another name he said. Oh, wait.
Rita Hayworth.
Oh, yes.
Betty Grable. Veronica Lake. Rita Hayworth. Veronica Lake. Betty Grable.
And those are from the Voyager, the Killing Game two-parter, right? Because then there's also the Enterprise. Well, one of the Betty Grable. One of them is from the Enterprise, you know. Yeah.
I don't know if all these three, I don't know if my sounds were all from the same episode.
Betty Gray, Rita Hayworth, Veronica Lake.
Veronica Lake.
Betty
Grable.
Rita Hayworth.
Veronica Lake.
All right, that's a guy who's frequently cast
as
a Nazi.
You here?
No Nazis this episode, but plenty of fascists and plenty of genocidal maniacs. All right, so that was Remember. Next week, we are going to be heading back in time to TOS. To TOS's Is There in Truth No Beauty?
No, you're lying.
No, that's what we're doing.
Beauty or no booty.
An excellent episode. I'm looking forward to that. It's been a long time since I've seen it. Dan's algorithm told us that's what we're watching. So is there in truth no beauty? That will
I
be
find
next week.
It impossible that any of us could be doing this purposely.
In the meantime, we can direct you to our website, www.itsgotstartrek.com, where... In addition to other things that you can do there, you can sort the podcast episodes by series.
Yes.
So if you just want to listen to other Voyager episodes, go click on Voyager.
I think it best that we now prepare for our departure,
in
Captain.
In the menu, and it'll only show the episodes where we've discussed Voyager, which is like 26 episodes.
That's right, Dan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. See, we tell Dan this every week, and he just doesn't get it.
It's highly unlikely.
On social media, you can find us at It's Got Star Trek.
I'm leaving, sir.
We're on YouTube and Facebook and Apple Podcasts and all that good stuff. Like and subscribe. Hey, especially YouTube. You don't got to watch us on YouTube because there's not much to watch. We put up a static image. We don't usually do actual videos yet. But if you can subscribe, that would be cool. It's helpful. Just subscribe. You don't got to pay attention to it. Just subscribe.
But I don't think satisfying your curiosity is worth risking brain damage, Lieutenant.
We look forward to talking about Is There in Truth No Beauty next week. And with that, we'll say a firm and hearty goodbye.
Boop. We just go on our merry way and nobody ever has to take any kind of responsibility?
Yes.
You must try some of these delightful algae puffs. They're fresh from the oven.
Harry.
Maybe later.